Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, a Radio Free Europe podcast on developments in Russia, its war against Ukraine, and its relations with the rest of the world. I'm Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL, and author of The Week in Russia newsletter. This week's podcast is about Russia's war against Ukraine once again, and we're going to focus on the big development that took place over the weekend. 6 months after U.S. President Joe Biden proposed more than $60 billion in aid to Ukraine, mostly for weapons to fight off the Russian invasion, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill providing that amount. It's expected to be approved by the Senate, which is going to start looking at it tomorrow, on Tuesday, and signed by Biden this week. He's said he'll sign it very quickly once it's approved. And my guest today on The Week Ahead in Russia is a Kyiv-based journalist who has been covering the increasingly severe effects of the long hiatus in U.S. aid on Ukraine's ability to defend itself as the third year of the full-scale war continues with no substantial sign of an end in sight. He is Christopher Miller, Ukraine correspondent for the Financial Times and author of The War Came to Us, Life and Death in Ukraine, which was published last year. Thank you very much for joining me, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me back, Steve. It's good to speak with you at what's an important moment for Ukraine right now.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show again. And as you say, an important moment. This time it's for Ukraine. Good news. We'll talk about sort of how good. And I'm not going to go into detail about the tortuous path this $61 billion package of aid for Ukraine took after Biden proposed it in October. But I will mention that the lack of new U.S. military aid and the lack of clarity, in Ukraine about when it would come, if ever, had taken an increasing toll on the capacity of Ukrainian forces to hold Russia back on the front lines, and also the ability of Ukraine to protect civilians across the country, as well as power plants and other infrastructure, from Russian aerial attacks, which have certainly been stepped up in recent weeks. Analysts and officials in the West and in Ukraine, including President Volodymyr Zelensky, have been warning that if the aid was not approved, Ukraine could lose the war. In fact, William Burns, the CIA director and a former U.S. ambassador to Moscow, said last week that without new U.S. assistance, quote, there is a very real risk that the Ukrainians could lose on the battlefield by the end of 2024. Or at least put Putin in a position where he could dictate the terms of a political settlement. Now, in Ukraine, uncertainty over the aid has hurt morale, I think, among both soldiers and civilians. Chris, you are there in Ukraine, and you've been reporting on these matters, morale, mood, and the situation on the front lines in the Donbass and in the south. Let's talk about the first part of this. How did things look before this vote in the U.S. House in terms of public mood? And what kind of reactions have you been seeing among Ukrainians to the vote in Washington on Saturday?
Yeah, so for the reasons that you laid out in your intro here, Ukraine being bombarded by Russian airstrikes, long-range missiles, drones on Kyiv and its critical infrastructure, as well as cities like Kharkiv, Odessa, Zaporizhia, Dnipro, Chernihiv, where we've seen a lot of death and destruction, as well as the lack of resources for Ukraine's military on the front line. The situation has been pretty grim in recent months. This uncertainty around the bill really did have an impact on morale and the public mood here. People have been at, I think, the lowest I've seen them in the past 2 years because of that uncertainty, and also because the Ukrainians have lost territory since last fall. There were already feeling a bit down after the failure of their counteroffensive last summer and autumn that failed to take back significant swaths of territory as they had originally hoped. And then when this aid bill was so hotly contested by Republicans in Congress, this really was just another hit for them. The loss of Avdiivka in February, where there was this grinding months-long battle that was, I would say, in a similar vein as the Battle of Bakhmut last year, also had an effect on morale. Not to mention a great loss of life and a pretty high number of casualties for the Ukrainian forces there. So it's been, people have been more downcast than I think I've seen them since the full-scale war began. But that's why this passage of U.S. aid in the House of Representatives has given them a morale boost. There was huge, palpable, a collective sigh of relief on Saturday evening here, and an outpouring of gratitude on social media for the final, passage of this in the House. And of course, it has to go to the Senate, but there it's expected to pass. And Biden has said that when it arrives on his desk, he'll sign it and let the aid, start flowing into Ukraine. I think it was probably the biggest audience of Ukrainians watching a vote in Congress ever. I can't think of another time besides maybe the joint congressional session where Zelensky spoke on a visit to Washington, I think in December 2022, when Ukrainians have watched an event unfold in Congress. Everybody, it seemed, who I knew from Kiev to the frontline trenches in eastern Ukraine were glued to their phones watching this. And I was in contact with some of the soldiers who I know and a couple of commanders on the front line who were watching this unfold using their Starlink internet systems. And they were writing me just elated that this had finally passed and that the prospect of much needed weapons and ammunition would start flowing into Ukraine very soon. Because they've faced a very tough fight and been fighting essentially with at least one hand behind their back. And so, this absolutely provided a much needed morale boost. Certainly today, even though the weather is a bit drizzly and gray, Ukrainians are feeling much better this morning, knowing that America is still behind them, and that at least for the next year, they will be able to plan operations, knowing that they're getting an influx of things like air defense systems, artillery shells, cash to keep their government and state running. So if we compare it to, let's say, a month, 2 months, 4 months ago, things are looking up for Ukraine, and they're feeling better right now. If we compare it though to a year ago, I would say, even with this morale boost, there still is this sort of downcast mood, just because there is a lot of uncertainty still. And if you remember, at the beginning of 2023, Ukraine was still riding relatively high because of their successful counteroffensives in Kharkiv and Kherson down there. So things have changed quite dramatically over the past year. This is a boost for Ukraine, for its public mood, certainly for Zelensky's position, for the military, and definitely for soldiers at the front line.
All right, well, thanks very much for that, Chris. Interesting picture you paint of kind of Ukrainians from the front, to Kiev and to the west, at home, watching the session on their phones. It's quite amazing the way U.S. politics has affected the situation in Ukraine over the past several years, and vice versa. But I guess that's maybe a topic for a separate discussion. So thanks very much for that picture. Now you mentioned one thing you mentioned was planning this, and that's been key. I think the lack of the ability for to actually conduct military planning. What weapons will we have, in a few months, in a year? So that sounds like an important thing. So let's talk a bit more about the potential consequences on the battlefield. Russia, as you mentioned, Russia's been gaining territory in recent weeks and months. You mentioned kind of the situation at the end of 2022 or earlier in 2023, and then after the unsuccessful Ukrainian counteroffensive last year, last summer and fall. Since then, Russia's been gaining territory, not huge amounts, but Russia took the city of Avdiivka, as you mentioned, in February, and their forces have advanced in some areas, both in the Donbass and in the south since then. And many expect that Russia will mount a major offensive fairly soon, as the spring and summer come. Now, without the aid, without this new, U.S. aid that presumably will be approved and start coming. There was talk of a possible Ukrainian defeat yesterday, and I'll just mention one detail. I guess maybe a month ago or so, or a few weeks ago, Zelensky was speaking to, I think, mostly U.S. but also Western kind of supporters, and he said, "You need to tell Congress that if we don't get this, Ukraine is going to lose." And that was a very rare thing for him to say, I think, even in that kind of context. But yesterday, after the vote, Zelensky said that he sees, quote, a chance for victory. Chris, you've been talking to soldiers, officials, analysts. Assuming all goes smoothly in the Senate, how might the influx of U.S. military support affect the course of the war? And the other question is, how soon might its effects be palpable?
Yeah, good questions. So, in regards to what Zelensky said, certainly without this new aid package being passed, the chances of a Ukrainian victory would be slim or none. So with it, they absolutely have a chance. Now, that said, they're still facing an uphill battle. Russian forces right now absolutely have the initiative and the momentum on the battlefield. They're pushing ahead and pounding Ukrainian positions at several points along the front line, particularly west of Bakhmut right now, where they're trying to seize the strategic city of Chasiv Yar. And they're using these really devastating glide bombs launched by their fighter jets and heavy artillery to really pulverize residential neighborhoods and push through the ruins to gain ground. So it's a real grinding, attritional fight, but they do have the upper hand still. And it would be a lot worse if this aid bill hadn't been passed. So with it, and if it does pass in the Senate as expected and Biden signs it, the weapons and ammunition could start flowing as quickly as the end of this week, is what I've been told in my colleagues at the FT, in various capitals across the EU. The United States has ammunitions and weapons for Ukraine already bundled up and ready to go in Poland and other EU nations. And I think Washington officials have said that they're pretty good at delivering this aid very quickly. They've got a lot of practice in doing it at this point. And as I said, it's already near, in some cases, near Ukraine's border. So it wouldn't take long to get it into Ukraine. It would certainly take at least, several more days, if not a few weeks, for it to start filtering into the brigades at the front lines. Some of the things where we might see a difference rather quickly would be in Ukraine's air defense. So it's expected that munitions and interceptors for Patriot air defense systems are going to be part of this package. And if Russia were to launch any more aerial attacks in the coming weeks, I would expect that if these interceptors for Patriots are given to Ukraine, that we would see a better percentage of drones and missiles intercepted than we've seen in the last couple of months. On the front lines, what can be expected is that 155 millimeter artillery shells, which are in the troops are in dire need of at the moment, are likely to get out to those brigades using American M777 systems, for example. Those units have been firing no more than 9 to 12 shells a day for the past several months. I was having a conversation just over the weekend with a commander operating one of them, who used a few very choice curse words to explain the situation and his frustration with Ukraine's American partners. And so he was watching this vote very closely, and was among those who I said, breathed a sigh of relief when he saw the passage of it. So we're likely to see these things start making their way to the Ukrainian units that use them, air defense forces around Kiev, Kharkiv, other strategic cities across Ukraine. No doubt this is going to help them in the fight. I want to be clear, though, that this package is not, as one Ukrainian official put it to me over the weekend, it's not a silver bullet, right? And it does not contain a silver bullet, meaning this is not going to this does not mean Ukraine is just going to turn around and destroy Russia on the battlefield and win the war. This is a package that allows Ukraine to better plan out a strategy for 2024 and put it in a better position for 2025, in hopes of ramping up its own for domestic production of artillery and weapons here, of getting more weapons and ammunition from the United States in the years to come, as well as the European Union. This really is a Band-Aid, but it can, like a Band-Aid is meant to do, it can stop the bleeding, right? And Ukraine has essentially been bleeding out, losing little bits of territory in eastern and southern Ukraine, as Russia pushes ahead. As you mentioned, Russian forces are not taking huge pieces of territory, but they are moving forward. And so this is the hope is that this aid package will stop that advance. And as Ukraine is digging in right now, and bolstering its defenses and fortifications, it could stop Russia. And if it does, again, put it back into a position where it could in the future gain the upper hand. And I'll just add one more thing, and that is there's another issue that really is on Ukraine to fix, and that is its shortage of manpower. And that is going to be another big factor in that decides whether or not Ukraine can really turn the tide of war in its favor. Right now, it's facing a severe shortage of manpower. Zelensky has taken some decisions to try to fix that. One being lowering the age of conscription from 27 to 25. A lot of people I've spoken with in the military who don't want to go on record because of how controversial and touchy this subject and sensitive this subject is, have said it should be lowered even more to allow for more military-aged, physically capable men to be drafted into the army. The reason being, Ukraine has lost tens of thousands of soldiers who were killed or wounded in battle, and they have tens of thousands of soldiers who are still fighting, who are exhausted and have been fighting without breaks for 2 years, or in many cases, for many more years. Some guys that have been on the front line since 2014, they need to be rotated out for a break. And so, there is this long mobilization that is meant to try to alleviate this shortage and provide more men. But one of the key elements of that mobilization law that was passed in Parliament and signed by Zelensky did deal with time or leave and rotation, and so that has yet to be addressed. So all of these things mean that, this bill puts Ukraine in a much better position at the moment, but there still are big questions that will determine whether or not it is enough to, give Ukraine the upper hand, say, by the end of the year or even next year. And then the other thing that we haven't gotten to, and as you said, it might be for another podcast, is the sort of Ukraine American Kiev Washington relationship, and the big question hanging over is whether or not Biden is going to win a second term, and if Donald Trump comes into office, what that means for Ukraine. So, that's another issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, obviously still a huge question, with the US election coming up in November. I'll just go wanted to, point out some of the things that you mentioned. The idea that, I mean, I've spoken to analysts and who say Ukraine was like an end of the war would not be expected this year in 2024, unless some said, unless this aid package was not coming, in which case, as William Burns, the CIA director, said, just I believe last week, Ukraine could lose this year if it does not come, or be forced into negotiations on Russia's terms. So now I think, and I think you were saying this, that it kind of sets things up for this year to still be kind of decisive, but changes the calculus and gives Ukraine a better chance to get the upper hand in the future, perhaps next year. But I just wanted to go into you mentioned and. You mentioned the key factor in Ukraine, the mobilization and getting more troops, to the front lines, and you mentioned the mobilization law that was passed after months of delays or months of discussion, I guess, in Ukraine. I just had I guess a follow-up question on that and the lowering of the draft age. So, I mean, from your talks or interviews with officials, military officers, do you feel and I guess with people who who may be up for conscription or mobilization. Does it seem to you that this law will be able to make a big difference in Ukraine's manpower? And then the other question, you mentioned that people have told you, soldiers, officers, that it would be better if the age was lowered further, lower than 25. Just what is the rationale for, because I think most people in the West maybe are familiar with systems where you become of draft age at 18. What is the argument sort of for not drafting people until they are 20 older, 25 or 27?
Yeah, right. That might sound odd to some people outside of Ukraine. So, I mean, when I was a senior in high school and about to turn 18, I remember, military recruiters banging down my door, trying to get me to sign up to the Navy or the military, the Army or the Air Force, because I was about to turn 18. Here at the moment, the age has been in the 20s, and that's because of differences if you compare it to the United States, where I grew up, in demographics, and there are just a lot more men of the age of in their 40s, early 50s, late 30s than there are in their 20s. And that is because of several economic and political factors in the 1990s, which were pretty rough after the collapse of the Soviet Union here in Ukraine. Families, didn't have a lot of means and were not making large families. And so there is just a shortage of men in their early 20s. And so that is one thing that Zelensky and others are aware of and cautious about. It's a sensitive matter for families here. The other issue is that they are losing a lot of men and women and a lot of experienced soldiers, and they need to replenish their ranks. And the fight is in, you know, the nature of the fight right now is so terrible and grinding and awful and brutal. You know, the reason that they have to lower this age is because they do have a dwindling population of military age males to choose from, and they're just not seeing the sort of gung-ho patriotic attitude, you know, take up arms and join the fight that they saw in February 2022 in the first year of the war. Just because of the current situation here and things being as sort of you know, tough as they are, or even a little bit more grim in terms of outlook. So they are going to have to make some tough decisions. This, you know, age being age requirement being lowered a couple of years is part of that. Yes, some people would like it to be lowered more, so that, you know, the pool of people to draw from is broader. And that's going to have that will have a significant impact. I think also, and it's not only in terms of numbers, but also the training that they're able to give. So, you know, if they're able to train up these people who they're drafting well, and over a period of several weeks, if not a couple of months or a few months, that also means they'll get better quality people, not just young and experienced men who will be thrown into the fight and last just a couple of days or weeks, but men who can become, you know, the types of grizzled soldiers like a lot of the experienced ones who they've lost in the last couple of years are. Yeah, it's a sensitive issue, that of mobilization. I think, you know, again, the nature of the war right now means that a lot of people are not rushing to join the fight. Demographics is a big part of the sensitivity of this issue, and I would even we call it an ongoing debate because there are still things that aren't fully settled, and there are a lot of officials who do, you know, think, as I mentioned before, that other measures will probably have to be taken, especially if this war, you know, grinds on for years, which is what Ukraine is preparing for now. We talked a lot about maybe just changing tactics briefly. We talked about, you know, comments from Bill Burns, who said that Ukraine may face defeat this year. I think, you know, we don't know exactly what he means by defeat. And I think if you ask Ukrainians what victory and defeat looks like, you know, you're going to get different answers than answers we would get from officials in the West. I think, you know, he probably means defeat in the sense that, you know, it would force Ukraine into a difficult position at the negotiating table. But a lot of Ukrainians, still, most, a vast majority of Ukrainians are not ready to negotiate. They don't want to see territories that Russia occupies currently fall longer under their control, or to have Russia cement its grip on those territories. And many people are still, a majority, are still willing, you know, to fight as long as it takes to beat back Russia. So there's still, even as grim as, you know, the outlook might be, you know, there is still a will and determination here to fight on. And I think that's just important to underscore always.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris. I mean, great. Thanks for the kind of analysis about the U.S. Aid package and also the manpower and mobilization issues. And that last part, you know, I think is very, very good kind of broader picture context of how things stand, you know, for many Ukrainians. So I appreciate it very much. And we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
All right. So once again, I've been speaking to Christopher Miller, Ukraine correspondent for the Financial Times and author of The War Came to Us, Life and Death in Ukraine, which was published last year. And my name is Steve Gutterman, editor for Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus in the Central Newsroom at RFERL. This has been The Week Ahead in Russia. Our theme music is Не стреляй, or Don't Shoot, a song from the early 1980s by Yuri Shevchuk and DDT. Please be sure to check out my newsletter, The Week in Russia, which covers the latest developments in Russian politics and society, as well as Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Subscribe by visiting www.rferl.org.